the inside is right. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. It's Wednesday. You know what that means. Father Tom Coy is here with you. Wow. For Brain Wrinkling Wednesday.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, the brains are wrinkled. As a matter of fact, this is the day after November 8th when Americans went to the polls. I need to share a few ideas with you how my faith interacts with my role as a citizen, someone who loves this country. And yet is quite fearful of what's going on, as it were. We're slipping away from a solid Christian foundation with the special role that Catholics have to play in a Christian society. It's been the topic of our Wednesday radio show for a good while. Here to help me unravel a bit of that is our good friend and friend of Winds of Change Radio, Mike Kenny. Can you say hello to our gang?
Yes, delighted to be with you, Father, and that's a great intro. Looking forward to our discussion.
Indeed. I'm a little verklempt today. I was one who was thinking there would be a greater reaction, a pushback from some of the craziness that we've been seeing. And I guess the best way to describe what happened on the midterm elections was each side held serve, to borrow a tennis analogy.
Yes. Yeah. It's shocking because there's so many objective indicators that the country is deliberately being taken in a direction that undermines who we are as a people on many different levels.
Yeah. One reaction that I have is that someone who is very depressed, someone who's being self-destructive in their life, even suicidal, doesn't listen or doesn't wake up. It's like you could tell someone, well, like an example many of us have probably encountered one way or another, is someone who's a chain smoker, someone who smokes a lot.
No!
And you say, you know, smoking is bad for your lungs. It might kill you someday. They just keep smoking.
Yeah. Yes, and there's at least the recognition that there's a chemical sort of dependency that is triggering that habit. Here, what is it that's triggering this voting pattern of voting for self-destructive policies?
Exactly. And I know a lot of people who smoke, actually, and that could be very good. They justify... They know you know you can't live forever, and this smoking calms me down in the nervousness and craziness of life. It's kind of a compromise, maybe. One, they know it's not good for their health, but in the long run, there's other valuable things they can be doing, and. Yeah, here's another reaction that I have to share with our listeners, and I appreciate what you're thinking. As a As a priest, as I hope to be a man of faith, trying to see all things that happen to me, with me, around me, in the light of faith in God, the light of the God-man, Jesus Christ, who came, taught us so much in terms of right and wrong, what is true and false, but not only taught us things, but died for us, showed us an example that this kind of a life without self-sacrifice won't save us. So I'm always looking for that angle. Those candidates who are particularly antagonistic to Catholicism and Christianity in general, I fear more than almost anything, you know. And here's a thought that just kept on hitting me over and over again this morning is that my good father, who was a wonderful businessman and a good Catholic, loved the church, loved his family, loved the country, was in the Navy back in World War II. He often said, and I know he said it with the utmost sincerity to try to teach us, his children, a good way to live. He often said, it's always the bottom line, it's money. Money is always the bottom line. And you know, even when I heard it, as I was getting more interested in my faith, in thinking about being a priest as a young man, I always felt that he was right in some sense, but it wasn't completely right. There was something wrong with that bottom line. The bottom line is not always money. The reason I say that is because it seemed like those people who just voted for the left agenda, shall we say, even though the left agenda is ruining us economically, there was something more important that they felt had to motivate them. And that's what almost all the Democratic candidates referred to in their last push for votes, and that was abortion rights. Abortion rights trumped everything, even their financial status. We'll risk financial ruin, but do not ask us to change our sexual ethics, our personal lifestyle in any way, shape, or form. Does that make any sense to you, Michael?
It makes tremendous sense. I think it's an accurate assessment of the landscape that we're living in. And as I listen to you, Father, I wonder whether or not the lifestyle decisions associated with the abortion question blind our ability to reason. And I've heard the expression that sin is, excuse the word, stupid. Sin is stupid, and because it's stupid in the sense it's against our interests, you know? And it's almost as if the diminishment of sexual moral standards have caused us to be going against our interests.
Indeed. I'm going to risk making an analogy here a little bit, but let's see if it floats, or I'm sure it can be tweaked in one way or another. But as a priest, and I know all our listeners know that
you're going to need a bigger boat.
We need a big. As a priest, one of the fears, one of the troubles hanging over our head is accusations of sexual abuse, you know, minors and what have you. Even though you would say to yourself, I have no reason to fear, there's fear because it can be false accusations, etc. We kind of know that.
Correct.
That kind of cloud hanging over your head will will Trump's, will like you say, almost take away your reason at a certain point on certain things. The way we would try to avoid any, well, number one, the all the what we call virtus training, you know, the classes that the psychologists have come up with to train all of us who work in the church and with children to be very, very cautious about what you would do with young people. You could certainly see a great need for that. You don't want to do anything that can be interpreted in a wrong way by a kid right at the moment or later on as they grow up.
Right.
And so there's this fear that you have to, how should I say, the analogy to protecting abortion rights is what I'm trying to get to here.
Yes.
That for so many, if they're involved or been indirectly or directly involved, and boy, that almost includes all of us, you know, in one way or another, it could be very indirect or quite direct, or there's that fear that says if financial ruin is coming my way, I'll accept the financial ruin instead of succumbing to this awful future without abortion rights.
Yes, that's extremely well said, Father. And I wonder, you know, from the beginning, the abortion advocates have talked about distorting language to change the cultural ethic from an ethic that protects the innocent to one that allows for freedom of choice, whatever the choice, including if it means the ending of the life of an innocent. And so all the language is crafted around ignoring the reality that there is an innocent life that is lost with every abortion. And when we focus so much on, you know, women's rights, we are excluding the equal rights of a separate individual.
Another person.
Yes.
Yeah, it truly is the defining issue of our day. Like even American bishops have said different times in the past, it's the, some bishops have said it's the preeminent issue of the day, but there certainly wasn't much encouragement as we were coming up to November 8th, as it were.
Yes, it's a precarious time because the issue is such a clear and stark one. I listened to the concession speech in Minnesota of Matt Burke, who was running in the second chair position, and he did a beautiful job saying, if even though abortion was not on the ballot here in Minnesota, if we lost because I am pro-life, I choose to be pro-life because I respect the dignity of every human being.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. I was certainly aware, and I wonder if some of the people who voted for the pro-choice candidates were as aware that their last push before the election was almost exclusively trying to get people to be afraid of losing their abortion rights. And on that, they said democracy is at stake. So the main reason for having a democracy is to protect that one right.
And yeah, it's so upside down, isn't it?
They accepted that. I think we're going to, how about we take a quick break, Nick, as we're getting started? I wanted to start the show off, but now we'll take a quick break. I wanted to start the show off with a touching story from the life of St. John Bosco, who was a great saint who worked with young people, of course. And there's just a little episode from his early life that I want to I want to share because I think it can lead to a different evaluation of, you know, what we're going through in our own time. So how about we say it like that, and we'll come right back. Everybody stay tuned. Okay, Nick, are you teed up? I'm Father Tom Coyce, guest host on The Winds of Change, and you are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio, on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. You are cordially invited to attend St. Stanislaus Koska Academy's open house this Sunday, November 13th, from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststanschicago.org, ststanschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy, instilling faith, virtue, valor.
I'm Father Tom Coyce, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Here is an open letter from Father Anthony Bush. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You people are the best of the best. I do not have the words that can adequately convey to you my gratitude for your amazing support to the renovation project that foresees new restrooms and the basement renovation that will enable us to have a gathering space after Mass for meetings and other events. A million thanks to some members of the Finance Council who have put in thousands of hours working at many levels of the project with contractors, archdiocesan personnel, and others. May God reward all of you for your amazing generosity. Signed, Pastor Anthony Bush.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. What a beautiful letter on that little mention about the renovation that's going on at St. Stanislaus Koska. Those who are listening in the Chicagoland area might know St. Stan's. If you ever drive on the Kennedy Expressway, the rectory corner of the building is 5 feet from the Kennedy Expressway. Anyways, wow. one of the old great parishes. So, and still a great parish. With God bless Father Anthony and all those people. I'll look forward to seeing the new bathroom and halls down there. Anyways, Mike, you had an interesting quote, and I want to share this quote from the life of John Bosco. And I want to put this in context of what our society is facing now. St. John Bosco was from a poor family. His father died when he was very, very little. His mother was raising he and his older brother, his four brothers. I don't know if he was the youngest, but he had an older brother that was a bit jealous of him. When John Bosco would serve at Mass and want to go to church, sometimes his older brother would say, no, you can't go. You got to stay home and do this or that work and what have you. Turns out that he finally got to know the parish priest, a Father Colasso. Father Colasso. And Father Colasso quickly saw that John Bosco had a great mind, and he was able to memorize and study things very quickly, better than many boys. After a mission, as they were coming out of church, Father Colasso decided to test little Johnny Bosco, and say, did you understand the mission preacher and his message? And John says, yeah, I think so. And the priest says, well, can you tell me at least the topic he was talking about? And John says, I think I could give you it word for word. and proceeded to practically repeat word for word what the sermon, the mission speaker said. That impressed Father Colasso very much. He goes, we got to train you. You got talent, kid.
Yes.
Isn't that great?
That's a beautiful story. Yes.
But it goes even deeper because, as John started to grow up and he was trying to train him to get him ready to go to become a priest. His older brother didn't want him to. He had to fight that battle. But the parish priest kind of held his sway and got his mother to get him to come to the rectory to study and learn his lessons. And anyways, the priest was getting old and on his deathbed. So I just got to read this little part. As John comes to the rectory while Father Colasso is very, very sick, and he says, where's it go? This is what John says. I have the key to Father Colasso's desk. Father Colasso gave it to me and in the presence of others made me understand that I was to take what was inside. But as soon as John saw how troubled and confusion would arise over the division of the dead man's property, the priest who had died, rather than be the cause of dissension, he handed the key to the priest's nephew. The nephew opened the desk, took a handful of money out, and held it out to John. I want to carry out my uncle's wishes, the nephew said. And he intended this for you, so take it. John, the future future saint, stood for a moment, looked, and thinking of how the money would have swept away all his worries, but he turned it aside. He said, I don't want it. I wouldn't risk doing wrong for all the money in the world. The end.
Wow.
Isn't that pretty powerful?
That's really powerful. That also, I think, links back to your comment about money isn't always the bottom line.
That's what I was thinking. That I remember seeing a survey before the election that said 80% of people agree that the country is going in the wrong direction. And yet 50% of those people just didn't want to change any political policies to look at it, to look for a change. You know, especially if the wrong direction had a great deal of financial consequences to it. And for better or for worse, you know, a financially solid life is better than devastating poor life. And yet, on the road to a devastating poor life, so many of the people, and I'm sure many Christians, many Catholics, said we better keep those political figures in office and just ignore the right to life issue. We can't let that right slip away from us, even as financial destruction comes back. That's how it feels today for me.
Yes, and one of my reactions at the time these results came through was to think about Lincoln after the Dred Scott decision in 1857. And I know you've written a beautiful book, Father, on the parallel between the Civil War legal issues and those that face us today. So what came to my mind was Lincoln clearly understood that because the Dred Scott decision overturned the Missouri Compromise, which was designed to end slavery by containing slavery, and the Dred Scott decision overruled and found that law to be unconstitutional, it then opened up the spread of the loss of liberty for a whole segment of our culture. We're in that situation now where the spread of abortion is the goal of the abortion industry.
Yeah, it's not at all containment or safe, legal, and rare, as Bill Clinton used to say, which is the kind of the hope that could help us go in the right direction, but we've lost that. We've lost it.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I'm afraid there are a number of people who don't mind voting for pro-abortion candidates, who have, in a certain sense, the attitude, well, let especially those people kill themselves and kill their offspring. What's it to me? You know, they reproduce too much.
No!
Yeah, that's the sad.
And, yes, that's definitely an aspect of this from the very beginning. The eugenics component, there was a mindset within Margaret Sanger that, you know, famous dimensions of her written description of her program includes the desire to reduce the population of certain segments, and it's just horrible to think of.
And if that doesn't sound racist, you know, what does? That's
correct.
And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to put that book together. Oh, by the way, my listeners, I'm going to have that book, The Ashes That Still Remain, that does compare the Roe versus Wade decision with the Dred Scott decision. It's going to be an Audible book soon. I'll have it out, and I'll have to let people know where you can download that.
Christmas. I hope it's out before Christmas. It would make a wonderful Christmas gift.
Oh, my goodness, yes. It's got to be. I like Audible books because I spend enough time in cars. You know.
We do, too. It's perfect.
Here's another angle, and we'll take our next break here if I can introduce it in this way, and maybe we'll come up with some interesting comments of the day. The other issue that was kind of so ignored was the increase in crime making big cities more difficult to go, you know, into certain neighborhoods. So many people know of people that have been robbed, hurt, carjacked, killed. I just a couple days ago, one of my parishioners told me that his granddaughter, her cousin, was shot to death a couple days ago. You know, obviously it just kills you. And it's not that death and destruction and crime has never existed before. We all know it's, but it has been rising to unprecedented levels. And so that issue, here's how I assess how the people who were willing to vote for those candidates who are, in the classical sense of the word, getting tough on crime, however else you want to say it. It's part of that angle. But it's a living out of the typical lack of virtuous attitude that says, when someone is mugged, if my neighbor is mugged, it's sad. But as long as it's not me, you know, we could overlook it, which is just kind of a loss of the sense of the great Christian value of seeing our brother man as our brother. You know, it's sad to hear, but, you know, not in my backyard, or at least it didn't happen to me, you know, thank goodness. That's
an erosion of the common good.
Yeah. Yeah, the common good. You want to see. But more and more people are a part of that subset of people that have been attacked and violently hurt. It reminds me a number of years ago. Do you remember an example? I think it was in the Netherlands or, you know, somewhere in Central Europe, North Central Europe, that a woman was brutally beaten and raped by some of the Muslim immigrants, or one, or maybe there were more. And the police, when talking to her, asked her, shall we prosecute? We picked up this guy. It seems like he's the one who did it. Do you want to prosecute? And she said, no, I don't want to appear racist. And I'm thinking, there is that overall arching value that they're holding to, that they won't give in on even. It's got to seem, I'm trying to put my heart and my mind in her heart and her mind, for her to do that, you got to sort of think that you're being a martyr for a good cause. The martyrdom, of course, is you're accepting your beat, your body pummeled and being raped. And the cause is not being a racist. Do you remember any of those?
I remember aspects of that, and I wonder if there's a certain degree of brainwashing that has occurred, where there's an inability to critically think through the crime as opposed to other aspects of the criminal that would somehow justify that kind of reasoning. And we have been immersed in language that creates confusion.
Yeah, that's certainly sad. Goodness, you had, before we go into the next break, you texted me a wonderful quote from Thomas Kempis, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
It was beautiful for today, and I think it can help any of our listeners who may be a little bit verklempt today.
Because
we were hoping to see a greater response by the majority of people around us. So you want to share that with us?
I'd be happy to. And this is from The Imitation of Christ, which is, next to the Bible, the most widely read spiritual work of all time, on Thomas A. Kempis. And the quote reads as follows: "You must first have peace in your own soul before you can make peace between other people. Peaceful people accomplish more good than learned people do. Those who are passionate often can turn good into evil and readily believe the worst. But those who are honest and peaceful turn all things to good and are suspicious of no one. It is no test of virtue to be on good terms with easygoing people, for they are always well-liked. And of course, all of us want to live in peace and prefer those who argue with us. But the real test of virtue and deserving of praise is to live at peace with the perverse or the aggressive and those who contradict us, for this needs great grace."
Well, we need great grace now.
I have
to say that's a beautiful thing. You know what it reminds me of? As I think many of my listeners would know, and many people I think would agree with me, that a huge aspect, even though I know it's not the only aspect of the great divide in our society today, but a huge aspect is the battle over the right to life. You know, and that that difference of opinion, you know, on that crucial point, is I could say, and I could kind of be at peace by saying to myself, what matters if there's a law saying you can have an abortion? I'm not going to have one. You know, so it doesn't affect me in that sense. Or if somebody who has had the misfortune of going through that, shall we say, and have made that bad decision in the past, they can easily be a person who says, what matters to me? I'm not going to do that again. I learned from my mistake, you know, and I'm going to go on. And yet that peace that could come over us regarding our, like Thomas Kempis says, our own soul, the peace within us. Each and every one of us can have peace in the sense that you say, well, I'm going to follow the good Lord and I'm going to do the best I can. When I fall, I'll try to get back up again. But be that as it may, the challenge in being part of a living, breathing democratic republic like we are in here, so we're forced to be part of the process where our opinions are supposed to rise to the top and the leaders are supposed to follow. And unfortunately, the American way has always depended on, well, the majority voice must be right. And that's never really been what most of us think.
Well, correct. And actually, there seems to be a loss of the realization that our country is a combination of certain inalienable rights that do not depend upon the majority vote, which our country has always turned to when we have violated that. And then the majority vote, of course, is part of the process, but not if it contradicts the inalienable right to liberty or to life or the pursuit of happiness, which properly understood is ordered liberty.
Yeah. And to help people see that it doesn't depend on our selfish will. In fact, when you become less selfish, when you become more other-oriented, the safety of other people means more to you, and the life of a legitimate unborn child becomes more important to you. But there's just a collapse. There's a selfishness that's beating too strong in our society today. You know? So speaking of which, we got to take another break, lest we be too selfish and not get our breaks here in time. Right, Nick? I know Nick's ready to throw out our next break, so let's take that bottom of the hour break. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change, and you are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on 88.5 and AM 750 WNDC.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. You are cordially invited to attend St. Stanislaus Koska Academy's open house this Sunday, November 13th, from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststanschicago.org, ststanschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy, instilling faith, virtue, valor.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy, and you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here is an open letter from Father Anthony Bush.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. You people are the best of the best. I do not have the words that can adequately convey to you my gratitude for your amazing support to the renovation project that foresees new restrooms and the basement renovation that will enable us to have a gathering space after Mass for meetings and other events. A million thanks to some members of the Finance Council who have put in thousands of hours working at many levels of the project with contractors, archdiocesan personnel, and others. May God reward all of you for your amazing generosity.
Signed, Pastor Anthony Bush.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. That's nice news that the project of the parish hall underneath St. Stanislaus Koska is moving along. I just want to put a plug into all those involved with church work to create those kind of, we call them coffee and donuts. Coffee and donuts after Mass is a key factor to getting to know each other, and it's building up a family spirit. The Mass, if it's done well, if it's done properly and reverent, it has a strong sense of me and God. I'm there to pray, as it in a sense should be. A lot of the modern churches try to turn the Mass into something that kind of fulfills that need for coffee and donut times. But we at my little church keep the two separate. They're close proximity to each other, but they are different. And the camaraderie, the cheerfulness, the kind of fraternizing that goes on during coffee and donuts times isn't really a part of the Mass itself. It needs to be kept out of the Mass, but it needs to be done. So we need those kind of things, and that's why St. Stanislaus Koska needs a nice hall right below.
That's so beautifully said. I just would like to add that I had the privilege of experiencing Mass at your beautiful parish, and you do provide communion and Eucharist at the Mass, and then also community and communion after Mass with great joy and coffee and donuts.
Yeah. You know, I was surprised it took so long to pull it off. For a number of months, I just had an open invitation to all the people at Mass. I'd say, come over to the rectory and share a cup of coffee. Somebody might bring some donuts or treats or something, and only two or three people would come. The same two or three people usually.
Yes. Yes.
And we kept on saying, everybody would just go to their cars. You know,
yes.
For months, people wouldn't take advantage of that little fraternity's time. You know, you're done with Mass and you want to get on with your day. You got to get to where you're going. And so hobnobbing with your church friends is just a waste of time. At least that's the way it started. But slowly, people started to come, and we filled up the rectory dining room enough so that it became too small, and we eventually had to move to the bigger hall, and now people, I think, look forward to it, and it rolls so beautiful. Thing to the standard, you know, like it's the same people that provide the service. 20% of the people do 80% of the work.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, it's a beautiful tradition you have created.
I also want to put a shout out what you said before the last break about where do we and how do we get people to realize there are such things as uncompromising, no matter what the majority opinion is. The taking of a life, as it were, in abortion. Should be one of those, but it's obviously not for so many. And one of my wonderful parishioners shared an insight she got from studying G.K. Chesterton's the book The Orthodoxy, if you're familiar with that great classic. And she said what hit her beautifully was Chesterton said that true progress never happens if your goal is always changing. Chesterton uses the example of, let us say we want to paint the town blue. And even if it's a big town and you got to spend a lot of hours painting the trees blue and the houses blue and the sidewalks blue and everything, you will make progress, even though you will take a long time. But if every day you go out and change your mind about what color you want to paint the town, you will never make progress. It'll always, true progress is progress through a goal that doesn't change, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a peaceful society that is respectful of life, if we think we could eliminate one real powerful aspect of life, meaning life in the womb, if we think that's up to us to change, then people who are so-called progressives are not progressive. Or if their only goal is to keep that institution alive and not and expand it, like your good analogy with the Civil War, they think they're making progress, but a progress that is really suicidal, self-destructive. I just can't get that idea out of my mind. People that are so stuck on these left-leaning, leftist policies don't see that they're self-destructive.
Yes, I think, unfortunately, it is also a reflection of the diminishment of the appreciation for the reality of God in our life. The first country to legalize abortion up to the birth is the first communist nation, the Soviet Union, in the early 1920s. And they were an atheist state that made that a priority. We have got to reincorporate the realization that we're a nation that believes in God. We have as our motto, in God we trust. And we had a Supreme Court decision that removed our ability to offer a voluntary prayer in school, but it's got to be naturally integrated into all aspects of our life. And I think once that happens, we'll have a reawakening of who we really are as Americans.
Yeah. And I see the hope must be, it should be within us, strong believers. And by us, I mean the shall we say, conservative Christians together with the Orthodox Catholics. And because the progressive Protestants and Catholics just can't see themselves as taking on that issue straight on. I heard one of the criticisms about some of the Republican candidates is they were afraid of the accusation of being pro-life.
You know, I think this is why John Paul II so often reminded us to be not afraid, because at those critical moments, we have to have the courage to speak the truth with clarity, with charity, and with joy.
Indeed, indeed. You know, I'm having a little senior moment. Did we take our three breaks already, or do we need one more? Nick, if you could chime in here. Do we need to take one more break? It's like, let's see, well, we'll keep going.
Yeah, I think we're okay. I think we're okay.
Because we're getting, I always keep an eye on the clock during our fast hour. I want to mention something. There's a number of people, since we're always involved with and always trying to get people to consider the right to life issue. There is a certain woman by the name of Mariano Mazzucato. Mariano Mazzucato was appointed to the Pontifical Academy for Life. And that may or may not be news to you, except for the fact that this Mariano is a professed and a publicly stated atheist who sees abortion rights as a good.
Yes.
Not even a endurable evil, but a good for society.
Yeah, it's a very frustrating. Yes, I'm aware of that and would consider it a tremendous scandal in the traditional sense of the word, which is a person representing an institution that has a certain set of principles but holds the opposite principles. That's a scandal.
Yeah. And I'm always trying to give the Vatican the benefit of the doubt and trying to see what I can see to not be too condemnatory or negative. But it was said that she was brought onto the committee or the academy to bring more humanity to the committee, which really makes me scratch my head because it sort of accepts the fact that those who are pro-life and are against the right to abortion are inhuman in one way or another.
It's a great contrast, and I don't think it's explainable. I can say as a layperson, a terrible mistake that is confusing a lot of people.
It is. Here's a take on it as a priest. Okay, if I'm going to give Pope Francis the benefit of the doubt as best I can, I'm going to say, well, he is the Pope, the universal pastor of not only the church, the group of people we call Catholics, but if he sees himself as the father of the human race. You know, I'm the universal father. And as I look at the human race, there are a lot of people who believe in the right to abortion. And they're my children, too. So I want them as a part of the conversation. But I have to add, as a priest, I'm just going to say it this way. There's a temptation as a priest, and I think it works the same for a guy like me in a little parish talking to several hundred people, whatever, as well as to a man who wears a white hat in Rome and talking on an international level. This same temptation, I think, is applicable. And that is, the temptation is to think that my flock is representative of the whole human race. As you look at the people in your congregation, I, as the preacher, often assume there's people with different opinions on moral issues, obviously. And I might assume that the people in my charge are quite representative or are equal to the whole human race. But in thinking that way, what you completely lose as a preacher is the idea that those in front of you in church at the time of your state you're preaching. You're called by God to send them out. You're called, as a preacher, I'm called to train the people in front of me to go out and preach to the nations, obviously assuming that there's people who don't believe. And you know, so you lose the mission spirit, which is something... Something that a lot of people say that we've got to be a mission church or else not a church, right?
You, as you've been speaking today, Father, I think of St. Mother Teresa, who walked the entire planet interacting with people of all different worldviews, but she consistently presented the truth with charity, and she spoke about the greatest threat to world peace was abortion. Because if that bond between mother and father and child can be broken, then there is no peace in the world, and that's got to be restored in order for there to be peace in communities in the world.
Yeah, the domestic church is so crucial. The universal institutional church is incredibly weakened when the domestic church is broken and lost and just failing. That's what we're seeing, you know.
Yes.
I think this attitude about, okay, I'm going to bring in a person who completely disagrees with our Catholic positions in an academy that is supposed to teach the world the right positions, it's kind of like... Remember Rush Limbaugh, the radio host?
Oh, sure, sure.
He used to say that I am the balance. Sometimes people would criticize him by not having guests on his show that were of the opposite opinion. And I always liked his response. He says, you get that opposite opinion all the rest of the day.
Correct.
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
Yeah. And it seems like our church can and should have a little bit more that attitude of there's, you don't need to pay someone to push the pro-abortion platform. That it's going to happen, and it is happening.
Does a martyr mean witness? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So if we're martyrs to the truth, we have to be consistently witnesses to the truth.
Yeah. And that truth that is part of our mission, as it were. I started the show by saying that this morning when I got up and heard more of the results, that the red wave did not come. I'm a little bit content that there was a pink ripple. But it convinces me that money is not the bottom line. People are willing to fight they're going to lose for their moral principles that are actually immoral principles. Well, that music means we're coming to the end of our show. Thank you, Mike Kenny, for being with us again. I'm Father Tom Coyce. Indeed, you've been listening to the listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and 88.5 FM.
Time is